This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Line applies to applications for the Homeowner Assistance Program only. Applications for the rental program will be accepted during the time rounds are open. KPFT Houston.
He's the star today.
You need to adjust your head, Mom.
Abby and I sat on one of the new elegant bridges spanning US 59. What was once a country highway, now an Amazon-wide multi-lane ribbon of concrete carrying all manner of gasoline-powered vehicles. For her, a two-year-old, it's mesmerizing to watch the headlights and taillights pass underneath the hypnotic monotony that is one of America's largest rush hours. What I notice, though, is the sound, an ongoing collective roar, like a mechanized wild snake. It's loud, and the air is not particularly pleasant. A couple of years ago, the mid-century raised freeway near our house, the kind that was rammed through many inner cities from New York to Chicago to L.A., was taken down and depressed below grade, turning what were dingy vagabond underpasses into suspension bridge overpasses. No question, it's been a great improvement. And with landscaping all around the banks of the motorized river, for a moment, you might even think it's enough. But sitting on the bridge over Freeway 59 is not like sitting on London Bridge over the Thames, or the Ponte Vecchio over the Arno in Florence, or over the Seine in Paris. In Houston, we have created rivers of automobiles, of sound and pollution, and we live and work among it. There are no quiet waters sliding by along US 59. People walking along the banks for an evening stroll, the sun setting peacefully over a distant bridge. No matter how nice the bridges or the landscaping, there's no hiding what flows past. The improvements are nice, but in a sense, they are the proverbial lipstick on the pig. Putting a hybrid power plant in a Suburban or Hummer isn't going to make the car efficient. Spraying some chemical on coal isn't going to make it burn cleanly. Placing 20,000 more troops in Iraq isn't going to change the outcome. You can put lipstick on the pig, but it's still a pig. Meaningful change requires far more than lipstick. It requires substantive, sometimes wrenching alterations to the conventional methods. Sometimes it requires admitting that we ourselves are part of the problem. I know that I'm part of the problem. But we must also be willing to participate as part of the solution. I like to think that people are waking up to what's real and what's not. In Buddhism, we speak often of the harmful effects of delusion. As a financial professional, I see it all the time in clients, markets, promoters. I even have to fight it in myself. But fight it we must if we are to achieve lasting change. We must be willing to look soberly at our delusions and be willing to take action to end them, rather than reaching for a nice addition of Estee Lauder Special Rouge, number 2. I'm Leo Gold. This is the New Capital Show. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the New Capital Show. I am Leo Gold, your host. A pleasure to be with you this morning here on July 26th. Where has the year gone? Where is it going? We're broadcasting to you from KPFT 90.1 FM here in Houston, Texas, on the Pacifica Network, and on the World Wide Web at www.newcapitalshow.com. I'm very pleased to have here in the studio with me today is my guest, Chris Eugster, who is the new Chief Officer for Sustainable Growth here in Houston. As many of you know, much of the news coming these days in this country on sustainable growth is coming out of our cities. A lot of coverage has been done on this, and Chris is working directly in this. I'd just like to read a bit from the press release that announced his hiring March 1st. This is earlier this year. Mayor Bill White of Houston today announced the selection of Christopher C. Eugster, a former partner at McKinsey & Company, as the Chief Officer for Sustainable Growth for the City of Houston. Eugster will work with key leaders both within city government and across the broader Houston community to drive energy efficiency, optimize our waste disposal capacity, and address environmental challenges in an effort to save taxpayer dollars and foster continued growth for the city. A former engineer and management consultant, Eugster has counseled many senior executives of Fortune 500 companies, investment firms, and entrepreneurs on strategic, organizational, and operational transformation. This is what the mayor said. Chris Eugster is the person to direct our efforts to make Houston a leader in alternative energy use. The benefits will make Houston more attractive to businesses considering a move to our city. Chris Eugster has a B.S. from Texas A&M University in electrical engineering and received his M.S. and Ph.D. in electrical engineering from MIT, graduating in 1993. He has received numerous honors and awards for technical achievement and entrepreneurship. He has numerous publications on technical and business subjects and holds two patents. Chris Eugster said, upon his hiring, "I look forward to working with leaders in our community to ensure good stewardship of our precious resources. The benefits to our community will be lower costs, higher quality of life, and continued growth and prosperity for the city of Houston." He's an active member of the Houston community, and like me, he is married with two children. Chris, welcome to the New Capital Show. It's a pleasure to have you on today.
Thanks, Leo. I look forward to it.
You heard my introduction talking about meaningful change. It sounds to me, when the mayor hired you, that the mayor is looking to have some meaningful change here in the city. Would you describe it as that? How would you describe the change that you've been brought in to lead?
Yeah, Leo, I think this is a high priority for the mayor. Energy conservation and sustainability is one of his key platforms for the city. He stated it in the city State of the City address in January of 2007. He wants to decouple energy consumption from growth in the city, and that is a big change for the city.
Let's look at that. Decoupling energy consumption from growth. So the idea is that whatever we do, we're not going to hamper our going forward. We're not going to hamper our projects. by reducing energy use, but we're going to make our use presumably more efficient. The way that we consume our energy is going to be more efficient.
Exactly, exactly.
And what are the linchpins of that? How do we go about that? I mean, I have a ranch, and I put in all alternative energy there, and what we had to forego in doing that was air conditioning. I mean, people look right at me like I'm nuts. You know, what are you? How can you be out in Texas without air conditioning? But we had to make some accommodations in the design of the building and the placement to capture winds and so forth. How do we do that in a city that literally, my brother said to me, would be uninhabitable without air conditioning? How do we do these things?
A couple things. One is building codes. You know, we are in the process of doing a major upgrade in building codes. We're working with the industry to do this, with the CIC and the private sector to do this.
What is CIC?
Construction Industry Council.
Okay.
And this would be a major upgrade in terms of energy efficiency of our building codes, and would put us at the forefront in the nation on kind of energy efficiency and building codes.
So there are companies, builders, developers, I don't know if this is the David Weeklys or whatnot, mm-hmm. who sit on this council, and in working with this council, the office of the mayor is trying to say, look, we're going to go forward with these things. We want your input so that we can see what codes are going to be reasonable and what time frame they can be implemented along.
Right. There are basically national standards out there that need to be localized to the community.
Like LEED.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like ASHRAE, mm-hmm. IECC. So there are different codes out there. And what we are doing is working with the private sector to localize these and amend these to the climate and the issues and the challenges for the city of Houston. But they are essentially major upgrades in mm-hmm. terms of energy efficiency for the city. And it's surprising. You know, everyone is very cooperative and excited about this process.
Presumably, and the press release announcing your hiring discussed at several points cost savings that would be passed on to consumers, cost savings that we'd passed on to business. And it seems to me that this has also been a major effort of the mayor's, which is to convince people that doing this is not going to be a loss of efficiency. It's not going to be a loss of comfort. That in fact we're going to see cost savings.
Exactly, and that's part of the transformation here. That we have to understand that the economics is just not around the building of that building, but it's the whole life cycle of that building. So you may have a small amount of additional cost to do these energy efficiency steps, but you're gonna get a premium in the market, whether it be kind of rent or resale value of that structure. And so if you look at the entire economics of doing these steps, those buildings are of a much higher quality than buildings that don't conform to those higher standards. And in effect, the market will reward those over the long run.
So give us an example of some of those things, just to put some detail on it, to paint a picture for people. What are some of the things that are being talked about for the way a building is designed now and is able to pass inspection now? If you go down to get your permits, you're able to get them now, but is going to change. What are some of the things that we'll see change?
Right. It really is comprehensive. I mean, these are binders with thousands of pages, hundreds of different tables, but things like higher standards for insulation, windows that are less transmissive to heat, roofs, air conditioning systems. Just every gamut of everything that a building uses in terms of energy will have a higher standard in terms of energy efficiency.
And do you have staff that helps you work through these issues? How does it work? Obviously, there's some negotiation that goes on these issues. How does the negotiation work? How do you get informed so that the office of the mayor says, no, we've got to have this? Black roofs in Houston is a problem.
Exactly. Okay, let me just step back. This is one of the things we're working on. I mean, the Office of Sustainable Growth has many different things that we're working on. The mayor didn't want to set up a huge bureaucratic office with lots of staff. So really, you're basically looking at the Office of Sustainable Growth. There are a couple other folks in there along with me, but it's a very small office, and our charter is to work with the department. So in terms of building codes, we're working with Public Works, with Andy Ickens' group, mm-hmm. Who's deputy director of in Public Works, to help that group achieve the right goals for the city. And that group, along with us, is working with the private sector to kind of localize these in a way that makes sense for Houston.
Okay. I want to come back to some of these areas that you're working in, but What's driving this? What are the big issues that are driving this to happen at the municipal level? I've been saying over the radio that we're not seeing this really very much at the federal level. What's driving it at the municipal level? We're seeing cover stories of governors from California, mayors from New York, and by the way, I know our mayor has appeared with Michael Bloomberg on several occasions. We're seeing mayors from Chicago, Dallas, cities from all over the country are really becoming the proving ground for sustainable ideas. What's driving it, and why is it happening in municipalities?
Well, I think the local government is seeing the problem firsthand. I mean, you've got rising costs, you've got constraints on your growth, and we've got the ability to do things. You know, directly. We also see it, and I don't think this is a ding. We think this is the right thing to do for our community. I mean, we've got families here, we have kids here. We want to create. These are our homes. This is not Washington D.C. This is Houston, Texas, where we live. We've got the ability to make change happen as a community, and it just all the ingredients are there to come together and make some of these changes. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of excitement at the local government, because we have the ability to do it. And we see the problem firsthand.
And then presumably, as well as citizenry going along, as well as local government going along, business and industry has to go along. You have a background. You were a partner at McKinsey & Company.
Right.
McKinsey & Company is the best known of all management consulting firms. It makes its living going in and advising companies on how to be profitable.
Right.
And so you are now moving over to the public sector side of things to try to help the city become, in a sense, profitable in the way that it does business. Are you finding that your relations with industry are amicable in the effort to do this, and in the effort to bring about change in a sustainable way?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it, across the board, and this is what makes this thing such an exciting time to be a part of this. We had a peer city review or a workshop when I first started on, and one of the cities on the West Coast, they had set up their Office of Sustainable Growth in the 1970s.
Yeah.
Okay. Now here, Houston,
San Francisco.
Houston set it up in the year 2007.
Yep.
Right.
Right.
But having said that, Houston, when an issue becomes front and center, mm-hmm. This community just it mobilizes like no other city, and that's what is so exciting about this. Whether it's local government, whether it's industry, or whether it's individual citizen. No one thinks this is a far-off issue. This is an issue front and center, and everyone is aligning to do the right thing.
Even our famous oil companies.
Especially the famous oil companies.
Okay, well, what does that look like? When we go to the oil companies and we say, we have refineries that line the natural resources of the city, Galveston Bay, Ship Channel, and so forth, and the mayor goes in and says, we want to make this sustainable. What's the reception? How does it go? What does that conversation look like? Help us understand in the voting public, what does that conversation look like?
Well, the easy conversation is around kind of the next wave. So around renewables, around whether it's solar or wind power, there's a lot of receptivity from these guys to kind of engage and push that, because they see that oil's not going to be around here forever either. So they're looking to expand their businesses to some of these new frontiers. So those conversations are very dynamic, very exciting, and very kind of forward-thinking and progressive. Now, in terms of how do you deal with the pollution that's coming up from the Ship Channel, and how do we make that better from the quality of life standpoint? There are discussions. The mayor had a benzene reduction plan that we're pushing voluntarily with the industry, and we are in discussions. But those are tougher issues to kind of tackle,
because they have a physical plant in a pricing structure for the product that's already in place, and so any incremental additional capital expenditures is going to affect that.
I'm not exactly sure I'm not exactly sure what the bottleneck or constraint. I don't think it's cost, because these guys are making a lot of money these days, and they should. And when you talk to them, they do want to make the right thing. Mm-hmm. I think they are worried about regulation, and I think they're worried if they give a little bit, they're going to give a lot at some point. And it's unusual for them to work voluntarily and cooperatively with a public sector. they're used to being kind of regulated and mandated. Now you have a local mayor like ours doing a wonderful thing, saying, look, you know, here's the mandate, here's the TCEQ standards. We want to do this, mm-hmm. okay? Work with us on this. I think it's a little bit different.
So they're trying to build up trust. Is there a trust issue? They're trying to say, can we trust that we're going to be able to take a path that's going to be that's going to ensure that we're going to be able to continue our business? And is that happening? Are you working in the area of air quality? I don't know if that's one of your areas.
A little bit, but it's really Elena Marks, mm-hmm. who's
been on the show.
Yeah, who's been on the show. That's really one of her key platforms.
Let's talk about wind energy. The mayor has talked about wind, and I think that something just passed city council, which mandates that, I guess, I don't know if it's government buildings, but 30% of the energy, of the electricity that's used by the city of Houston is going to be coming from wind.
Yes.
Tell us about that initiative and what passed city council and what the implications are.
Okay. We are hugely excited about this. This puts the city of Houston on the map in terms of renewables and sustainable growth. Basically, what passed city council is a contract with the GLO, the General Land Office, and Reliant, who we procure our power through, that gives us the ability to go up to a third of our power directly from wind farms. Mm-hmm. Okay, and this is a big step because, you know, people think, well, all I got to do is, you know, pick up the phone and call and say, you know, I want to have a third of my power from this wind farm in West Texas. Well, how do you get that wind over here to Houston? How do you make sure that wind is firm, that energy is firm, right? Because if the wind doesn't blow, you know, city lights and airport facilities can't go down. How do you deal with the credit risk? Because these are long-term, you know, five-year deals. So what we did, and it was an extraordinary process, working with Issa Dedouche, head of building, or now general services, we worked together on this to basically put a very complex contract in place, which allows us to do that, which allows us to pick up the phone and say, I want 10 megawatts at, you know, $69 a megawatt.
So we're, in a sense, the city is taking advantage of its proximity to the West Texas wind farms because, of course, transmission is a huge issue in getting wind power to a place where it's usable. But apparently that's something that the city is able to take advantage of.
Well, yeah. First of all, wind, out of all the renewables, is the most market competitive. I mean, you're talking about 4 to 8 cents a kilowatt hour. So this is not a subsidized program.
Not on my bill.
Right. Well, and that's
mine says 17 cents. Where are you getting your power, Chris?
Yeah.
We personally use
Green Mountain.
You're buying in bulk, right?
Yeah, and we're going directly to the wholesale market, and that's part of being able to do this. But wind is competitive, unlike, you know, some of the other renewables that are still coming down the cost curve. So we're excited by that. Texas, in terms of capacity, is, I think, the number two state behind, I think, North Dakota in terms of wind capacity. We've now passed California in terms of the number one state in terms of wind turbine generation. You talk to a lot of these guys, including some of the major oil companies, they're planning sort of massive wind farms, you know, and so there's just a lot of excitement here around wind. Getting back to what you said earlier, it's green, it's good for us, and it's economical.
Let's talk about solar for a second. Is there any attempt to implement solar power in city buildings? I know that I have found on my ranch that solar power is far more efficient where I am, and I'm close, not far from the city, far more efficient in this part of the country than wind is. The wind blows more in West Texas, but not so much here in the eastern part of the state. But I get plenty of solar power. Is there any thought to implementing solar either in city buildings or to implement a program here in the city itself for consumers?
Yes, we're very excited about solar, and we are looking at that intensely at this moment. A couple things on solar. Solar becomes a lot more economical and feasible if you could have dynamic pricing with smart meters, so that you are allowed to address the peak pricing issue, because you get most of the solar power when pricing on the electricity side is the highest.
When it's hot and sunny and people are running the air conditioners.
Exactly.
In the middle of the afternoon.
Exactly. But the way the utilities price the power right now is it's an average price for that day.
So implementing solar would would allow us to take the volatility out of the price and to blunt the peak, the spikes in the peak, of the power of the peak load. If you just joined us, this is the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host, and my guest today is Chris Eugster, who is the Chief Officer for Sustainable Growth here in Houston. He's been in that position since March of this year. This is a new position that was added, right, Chris?
Yes.
New position added by Mayor Bill White, Mayor of Houston. And I think we'll have a little time for your calls. I'd like to take a few, maybe 20 minutes. And so 713-526-5738 is the number, 713-526-5738. If you have questions for Chris, I think we'll have time for a few calls after he and I discuss a few more details of what he's working on. Okay. I don't know what that is. Can everybody hear that? No? I can hear that. Anyway. Let's talk for a second about traffic and automobiles. I let off the show today talking about my experience of walking over the bridge. Are you tasked with looking at transportation in the city at all and how we can, I think logistics is one of the things that's mentioned in your purview. Are you working at all on transportation issues and how we might bring about less pollution from automobiles? Are we looking at plug-in hybrids or battery-powered cars, any type of thing that would allow us to meaningfully change the profile of our transportation in the city?
We are looking at some of those topics. I personally get very excited about the plug-in hybrid concept. I think it's very interesting to be able to power a car overnight when a lot of this generation capacity is available, hopefully with wind farms. So you're powering the car with wind farms,
there's no emission if we're charging our cars up overnight with wind power, and the car itself is running on a battery, then there's no emission whatsoever.
Yeah,
it's an amazing thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Right, and then we're close to it from a technology standpoint. Yeah. So I think over the next couple of years, we probably will see that type of technology. And the question is, how do we make those cars available here for Houston? Because I know a lot of these OEMers, the manufacturers, will make them available in California first or other places. So how do we get some of those things available here?
Well, is that happening? Is the city or other mayors in the state or other cities going and saying, we'd like to be included in this? We don't want California or Massachusetts or New York to be the only places that get a head start on these things. Is Texas becoming a place where automobile manufacturers or other companies purveying technology are looking to implement initial first use?
Right. We have some of those discussions. We are trying to pursue those discussions to make sure that does happen. So we're excited about plug-ins. We think those are going to be available. We like to think about ways to increase adoption here in Houston, whether it's awareness, education, maybe some incentives. You know, there's some concepts that have been kicked around in other cities about maybe allowing free parking or discounted parking at city facilities if you have a plug-in hybrid or if you have a hybrid. So there are some things that we can do to kind of help adoption here in Houston.
Anything in the area of congestion pricing? I know that this has been a big controversy recently in New York City. Ken Livingstone, the mayor of London, implemented congestion pricing in that city, and he has declared it to be a raging success, that they have managed to clear large amounts of frivolous traffic out of the center of the city of London, so much so that Mayor Bloomberg in New York has looked at adopting that. Was not able to get it adopted recently because he was blocked in the state legislature in New York, but I think it's only a matter of time before that happens. It looks like it's more of a political issue than a practical issue. And I also see some rumblings and some attempts here in the city of Houston to establish some congestion pricing on some of our toll roads. Is there any thought being given to congestion pricing here in Houston?
Yeah, there is some thought, and there's some people looking at it. I personally think it's maybe it's a Band-Aid. It's not the to me, it's not the long-term solution here for the city. I think moving to more of a plug-in mass transit solution is the way to go.
What are we doing in mass transit? How should Houstonians think about moves to mass transit?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, there are some pretty interesting car sharing ride programs that are sort of web-based. I know that the Houston-Galveston Area Council, or the region, has one of those. I don't have the name of it. It's Green Rideshare, something like that. But that's the easiest way to do it, is basically get more occupants per vehicle, sort of a mini mass transit model.
But we've tried it before. I mean, I feel like we've tried it before. We've been trying it for 20 years now, and we haven't made a dent. What's different?
Rising gasoline prices is making a dent, and people are saying, well, this is now hitting my budget. Maybe I should carpool on it. But I'm just saying that is a step each of us can, you know, I think what's important is what are steps that each of us individually can do instead of waiting for someone to build something for us. I think, in addition, there are mass transit things that are being looked at by the city. But these things take, you know, we're trying to get, you know, this issue around, you know, the Richmond Rail, and that's, you know, that's taking years, and that's just one small segment. So, you know.
Let's talk about waste management. I think that's something that's managed as, or mentioned as one of the areas where you're working is in waste. The story I like to tell is I attended a Cirque du Soleil concert, presentation show, a show, and I drove a long way out to the Sam Houston Tollway from my home. I live in the center of the city, and I had a beer, and the beer came in a big plastic bottle, and I wanted to recycle it when I was done with it. And leaving the show, I had the empty bottle, and I saw that there was no place to recycle this bottle that was provided by the promoter of the event, so I wanted to take it home and recycle it myself. That's what I do when I go to restaurants or whatnot, and there's no way to recycle materials. I take them home. Well, this was an empty beer bottle, and they have an application with the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, which doesn't allow the taking out of containers, whether they're full or empty. And I thought, this is nuts. This is crazy. The thing is totally empty. I want to recycle it. I want to do the right thing, and I'm being stopped from doing it. The bottle was taken away from me and thrown into the garbage can and to be put in the waste stream. This looks to me like an enormous problem, the amount of waste that we produce from construction sites, just from restaurants and so forth. What is being done in your office about this to try to bring our waste management into a more sustainable profile?
Leo, I think there are a lot of opportunities on this topic. Part of the issue with Houston is our disposal costs are so low at the landfill relative to kind of the West and East Coast, and so there's not the same economic incentive.
Let's tax them. Let's raise them. Let's have city council stick a 100% surcharge on it. We'll get people doing the right thing real quick.
I think there's some easier ways to do that. For example, let me give you an example. All of our wood waste and yard waste, okay, the yard trimmings, as well as the heavy green trash, the tree trimmings that fall down, tree limbs, all that stuff is essentially going to landfills right now. And we have the opportunity to redirect that economically to composting facilities, maybe potentially even to wood fuel for pulp and paper plants, for biomass applications. Tremendous opportunity, okay? But to do that, it's going to take some work, and it's going to take some heavy lifting like we did on the wind deal. And so we are working on that right now in terms of kind of how would we do the collection side of this, how would we set up composting facilities in the different quadrants of the city, and how do we redirect this away from our landfills. So we are looking at that front and center.
But why is it only a landfill issue? Why isn't it also an environmental waste stream issue that a bottle has use and reuse capabilities beyond just going into the landfill? Why is that not a part of the calculus? I'm not hearing that in your response as part of the calculus.
Yeah, no, the city of Houston does have curbside recycling programs and recycling programs. So we are doing that, and I think on that front, it's a matter of how do we scale these programs so that they're more available to people all around.
And how do they get implemented also, not just in curbside of homes, but how do they get implemented in places of business, like a restaurant or a Cirque du Soleil show? I mean, it looks to me as if those organizations have absolutely no regulation on them whatsoever to provide for recycling or redirection of waste streams. I don't know why they should be exempted, and it's my understanding as well on the recycling program that because it's voluntary, it's implemented spottily, certain materials are not accepted. I guess I'm wondering, at what point will Houston have really a recycling program that everybody can point to and say, this is Class A, top notch, first. It's required. The regulation of it is appropriate, and it's incumbent not just upon consumers but also on businesses.
Yeah, Leo, I think it's a great idea. I will check. I think it makes a lot of sense to have place of businesses or, you know, big events recycling, because it not only do you capture that waste stream, but it also promote the thinking, and it's sort of a cultural change in terms of doing this. I know in Germany you've got recycling, different color recycling right outside of your apartment.
Yeah.
So it's a cultural thing.
Japan has 45 different categories, including used socks. They use socks get recycled. They use them as rags. Why not? I moved into a new office recently, and I can't tell you. I was looking around for rags. We had to stain some wood and all this other stuff. And you know, 10 of us standing around saying, who's got rag? Nobody's got rags. And, Japan, you know, they don't lack for rags. They've got old socks recycling for rags. If you're just joining us, this is the New Capital Show, and my guest today is Chris Eugster, who is Chief Officer for Sustainable Growth for the City of Houston and working specifically in the mayor's office. We're going to stop and take some calls from you right now, 713-526-5738, if you want to talk with Chris Eugster, ask him any questions. Our first call today is going to be Evelyn. Evelyn, welcome to New Capital Show.
Hi, thank you very much. And I was really interested that the city is thinking, if I understood you correctly, of buying wind power directly wholesale. And that sounds great. I have not understood if wind is in the 4 to 8 or 5 to 8 cents per kilowatt.
That's what the city has contracted to buy from.
No.
I'm sorry.
That's basically a sort of an industry average.
Right. Well, I don't know what the city has contracted at, but I don't remember the numbers anymore. But I had done an analysis for myself, trying to find a good, I guess, energy provider. And everyone that I called that was on the list that the state of Texas provides, that it was available to me, charged more for wind power, more for alternative energy, more for green power than for their regular fossil fuel, even though, you know, you just get the same mix everybody else does on the street. But when you as a customer commit to that, then the equivalent of what you use is purchased, as I understand it, by the power company, and it just.
So you're saying, yeah. Evelyn, you're not able to find something that's affordable and to your satisfaction?
I'd say that bottom line, but even more cynically, I wonder why these power companies, if they can get this cheaper, why people who are trying to do the right thing and trying to get green power, why they're charged more, as though they're being taken advantage of. That's the impression I had. And I called each of them and asked them to explain to me why, if wind power was 5 cents a kilowatt, I understand there's something for transmission, but why they were charging more for something that was actually cheaper for them.
Okay, Chris, how about the price of
and
of
the
power?
And the second question...
Real quick, Evelyn, I want to do... We got a lot of calls today, so we want to do one question a person.
I'd like to know if I can join with the city and buy from their source also.
Okay, thank you, Evelyn.
Okay, Evelyn, great question. I know it's frustrating. You know, I personally use Green Mountain Energy, and we do pay a slight premium from some of the other programs. I think that is changing. You know, wind power is becoming more competitive, and as we are building fewer of these coal-fired power plants, you know, the prices out there are going to be more consistent between kind of fossil fuel and renewables. Go to the City of Houston's website, and we have something called Consumer Choice, and it allows you to look at prices being offered by all the different REPs, both green and their standard offer. So please just go to that website, and that allow you to get some transparency on price.
Chris, the mayor wrote an editorial in the Houston Chronicle back around the time that you were hired, in which he basically slams deregulation in Texas. He says it doesn't work. The emperor has no clothes. What we've seen is a development of a situation which is taking advantage of consumers. It's allowed Wall Street investors, as he put it, those are his words, Wall Street investors to come in, purchase power plants, and flip them on several occasions. And he basically says it's been a failure. You know, where does the city stand on deregulation? He's called for greater regulation, I think, by the PUC, the Public Utility Commission, in the regulation of rates. He's got, you know, I mean, 10 bullet points here. Mayor is a lot smarter than I am. Some of these bullet points I don't even, not able to interpret. Determine adequacy of base and peak power supplies. If necessary, provide cost-based incentives to obtain clean power. Establish maximum levels of debt acceptable for transmission and distribution companies. Set rates for transmission. I mean, all sorts of recommendations. Is the city going to bat to try to get greater regulation over power companies?
No, I think we are we are going to try to improve what we've got, okay? I think the first point, it is pretty clear that deregulation hasn't really worked as people expected. If you look at San Antonio and Austin, where they are more vertically integrated than we are, they're power prices, electricity prices for individuals is much lower than ours. Okay, it is what it is.
And these are cities that have a regulated local utility.
Exactly. So,
and by the way, folks, we're going to have a representative of Austin Energy on in a few weeks to talk about that and talk about their experience with power.
Right. So, a couple things that I think we need to think about as a city is And we saw this in telecom as well. The prices are competitive out there, but you've got to be able to shop around. And in a lot of people's mind, they don't want to go with another provider because they feel that provider may not be reliable in getting the power to them. So what happens if my power goes out during a thunderstorm? They think, company XYZ is not going to be able to bring up my power again. When in fact, CenterPoint is the one that is basically providing the transmission and distribution of the power. And these retail guys are only providing...
They're marketing.
Exactly. And so there's, you should think of them almost like telecom was, long distance provider 5-10 years ago, where I can switch from AT&T to SBC to...
But presumably, ultimately, as a management consultant, you know then that what we're going to see is competition in who can provide the most cost-effective marketing segment of the business, but we're not going to drive down any other segment of the business, including cost of generation, cost of transmission, and the business is much more than just the marketing segment.
I totally agree.
Was my experience. When I went and looked at the competitive rates on the City of Houston's website, I saw, there's a little bit of competition here, but the prices are not that variable.
Right. It's about 10-15%, but you're right. That's one segment, but that's an important segment that we have direct control of. On the generation side, since it is a free market now, we should be building more wind farms, some solar farms. And so when that capacity comes online, it's going to start to make a dent on the generation side.
And so in a way, alternative energy is the cudgel now that since regulation essentially has been thrown away by the state in 1999, alternative energy is becoming the cudgel with which we regulate through competition fossil fuel generation.
Yes, and use the market forces to our advantage.
Okay, next up, let's take some more calls. Next up is Joe. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hi. Very quickly, I was confused by a recent Reliant Energy offer that says it's a contract they're asking people to sign. Yes, I want to change the new Reliant Energy residential wind plan, and it claims to be 100% wind-generated electricity. Now, I've dealt with some other alternative providers, and they admit that they cannot provide 100%. So what do you think Reliant Energy is trying to do here? Because they don't give any explanation unless you sign the contract first. And then I don't know that they would explain it.
Yeah,
honestly.
Part of it is you have to read these contracts carefully. I know that all the major marketing retail players, Reliant, TXU, Direct Energy, and all the rest of them, a lot of them do have green energy options, okay? And as they should, because that's going to make this more affordable and more mainstream to us. And Reliant does. If you sign up to that program, you will be getting green renewable power. Now the terms of that contract, how many months or years you have to lock in or price. I mean that really is outside of whether this is green or not, and that really if you're not happy with that one, I would go to another provider and see if you're happier with their terms.
And we also have to cut consumption. Joe, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
What is the city doing to promote conservation here in Houston? What can we do? I mean, I have seen many experts say that the very first thing that we should be doing before we do anything is to try to cut our consumption. And so what can the city do? What can the mayor's office do to encourage that?
Yes. Leo, you're absolutely right. Consumption, conservation is the easiest megawatt, kilowatt save.
The lowest hanging fruit.
Lowest hanging fruit. And so two things the city's doing. The city has a big power to people campaign program to educate and promote awareness around energy conservation steps that each of us individually can take. There are five steps. We talk about kind of replacing our traditional light bulbs with CFLs, the compact fluorescent light bulbs, which are close to 75 to 80% more efficient. So you're using almost 80% less electricity to put to power up that light bulb. If all of City of Houston does that, you know, we would need, you know, one less coal-fired power plant out there. That's each of us can do that. You know, we can just go to Walmart, buy it, Home Depot, buy that light bulb and screw it in.
Or your local hardware store.
Or your local hardware store, sorry. Okay. That's one step. The second step is sort of caulking, weatherizing your home, caulking the windows, the doors, to make sure that your home is airtight. Maybe putting your air conditioner a couple degrees warmer during the summer, your heat a couple degrees cooler during the winter when you're not there. I mean, it makes a big difference. There's myth with around, well, if I make it a couple degrees warmer, I've got to run the air conditioner harder when I get back there. That's not true. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's 1 or 2 degrees, it doesn't make a difference.
What you're saying is that it's okay to run the house at 85 degrees when you're not there, and then to come back and it'll take a couple hours to cool the house off, but the savings that you have made from being on vacation will be enormous.
Right. Or even easier is just if you're running it at 78, you go up to 80. You know what? Yeah. If you go pretty far.
My parents run it at 68 when they leave. It infuriates me. We run our house at 78 in the summer, and we'll even take it up to 80 at night. I mean, it's and you think about it, it's not that much. It's really not. I mean, 80 degrees is not all that uncomfortable. 713-526-5738. This is the New Capital Show. My guest today is Chris Eugster, Chief Officer for Sustainable Growth here in the City of Houston, working directly for, and you report directly to the mayor. Is that
yes.
Right? Report directly for the mayor. How often do you get in to update him on how it's going?
We have a weekly staff meeting that we're together on, and then typically once or twice around specific issues.
Okay. Let's see. Let's take line six, James. James, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I was wondering if any of the high-rises downtown have went or checked into the green roofs, or say like a company comes in, they waterproof the whole roof and they plant native grasses and plants on it, and it provides shade for the building and, you know, wildlife habitat for, you know, native birds.
James, this is an existing building that you know of, or you're saying is there such a thing?
I was wondering if any companies or buildings downtown have done it. I know there's a few in Dallas and Austin have done it. I've seen it on the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center website. And was clicking around there, and it, you know, talked about environment, you know, the environment and stuff, and what, and it had, you know, it went to a link with this company that's doing this to these buildings.
Okay, James, thanks for the call. Chris Eugster, is that part of the building codes? Or are we
no, I think that is sort of a step up beyond that. I think two things on that. First of all, the City of Houston, for its own new facilities, new construction, they have to be LEED buildings, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So any city buildings. And I think green roofs is kind of one step or one point you might be able to get there. It's an interesting concept, and, we're excited about these kind of thoughts and innovative ideas. But equally important is how do we put cool roofs on all of our, you know, facilities so that, you know, forget about, you know, having a vegetation and landscaping on it, but how do we get beyond these black tar roofs to, you know, there's canvas, white canvas roofs. There's, you know, there's all sorts of great ideas that, so cool roofs and roofs are we're thinking a lot about.
Huge. I mean, black roofs here in Houston, it's the craziest thing.
Right.
We should all be having white roofs the way they do in Greece. Greece as well. Chris Eugster, here's an article. Top 10 U.S. cities ranked by use of renewable energy. Number one, Oakland, California, 17% of power from renewable energy. Next, Sacramento, 12%. 3, Portland, Oregon, 10%. Boston, 8.6%. San Diego, 8%. Austin, Texas, 6% is number 6. Los Angeles, 5%. Minneapolis, 5%. Seattle, 3.5% is number 9 and 10. Chicago, 3%. Houston is not showing up on the Sustain Lane U.S. city rankings for 2000 and 2006-2007. Scott Wentworth energy engineer of the City of Oakland, which was the number one ranked, says results in Oakland are built on the substantial foundation of renewable energy created by California's renewable portfolio standard. That's a state. That's a state standard. Can we get it done here in Texas without support from the state?
You know, the city stepping up with this wind deal that just passed council. The city government itself is taking a leadership position in doing a third of our power from wind farms. So,
yeah. Would Mayor White like to see a Democratic state legislature? Would he like to see a Democrat in the state house? Does he think that the state would be better led by a Democrat or somebody beside Republican administration?
I think you've got to get the mayor in here to answer those questions. But I think the state has an important role here to make some of these things happen. And one of the reasons California is pretty far ahead is because they have taken some of these things on at the state level. All we can do is do it at the city level, and we're excited about that.
Next up is Robert. Robert, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you for having your guest today. Chris, I had a couple questions for you. In terms of, you know, I live in Southeast Houston, only a couple of minutes from downtown, and two things that I find really lacking are no curbside pickup for recyclables in my neighborhood, and absolutely not the mass transit. You know, metro system is not really a plausible solution because of the routes, because of the whole, the system doesn't have a lot of holes.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not getting me the places that I need to, and I would love to ride mass transit. Believe me, I would love to not have to drive my car everywhere, but I don't really have any options, and so I've been you know, looking for other ways. You know, you mentioned the carpools online and everything like that, but you know, even that doesn't have the solutions that I need, just because I run kind of an opposite direction from most of the flow of traffic.
Okay, Robert. Chris,
yeah.
Hugster, what about coverage of the metro system? Is it being enhanced? Is it being expanded? What can we expect from Metro in the future? And how closely do you work with Metro? How much control does the mayor have over Metro's policies?
We do have a dialogue with them. You know, they are a separate entity. I know that the mayor has the ability to appoint, you know, certain director or board members. I don't know the exact number. So there is some influence there, and there is certainly dialogue going on. But we're not heavily involved with their strategic direction. At least my office isn't.
But are you tasked with going to the mayor and saying, you know, okay, Metro does this, and the city looks like this, and you've put me in charge of sustainable growth, and this is what... Are you tasked with making recommendations about where the city ought to be, regardless of who has jurisdiction over doing that? Is that something that you present to him?
Yes. And again, the thing that we are pushing on transportation is the plug-in hybrid, you know, thinking about sort of highly fuel-efficient individual cars that have zero emissions.
Oh, I'd love to see that. Wouldn't that just be an amazing city if everybody's driving plug-in hybrids and there's no emissions? It'd be amazing.
Yeah. And Leo, just one final thought on that. I mean, mass transit is just such a, like I said earlier, such a long-term, huge challenges, et cetera, et cetera. You know, City of Houston, for better or for worse, is building lots more highways, freeways, concrete out there. If we can make those with zero-emission vehicles, you know, I think it is a win-win.
Okay, next up is Willie. Willie, welcome to the show.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I want to ask, what do you all think about using our trash to generate electricity? We have mounds and mounds of trash. We're going to run out of room. We have the technology to use scrubbers to clean the smoke and reduce the smoke by a large percent. These power plants can be built well outside of the Houston area.
Okay, Willie. Yep. Well, let's see. Thanks for the call, Chris. Can we create any meaningful amount of energy from burning our trash?
There are a couple big projects being looked at, you know, in the state around this concept, and so we might see something there. The other thing is there is technology, and there are operations right now to turn landfill gas to electricity in some of the local landfills.
Yeah, I have a friend who worked in that and said it just Just small. It's not going to make a meaningful impact. Next up is Alan. Alan, welcome to the New Capital Show. You are on with Chris Hugster.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about the CFLs, the compact fluorescent light bulbs. I like using them, but just have a question about the proper disposal of them. I've been saving up all my dead ones and just wonder what to do with them, how to best get rid of them.
Because they have mercury in them.
Correct.
How do you do that, Chris?
Okay. That is sort of a hot topic. You know, we hear about all the benefits, but they do have a trace amount of mercury. It's small, certainly much less than what you might find in a thermometer, less than what you'd find in some of these watch batteries out there. So it is trace amount. So you don't have to be scared of it on an individual level. Make sure you seal it up. And dispose of it properly. But if we start to get significant adoption of these CFLs, we do need to take this thing seriously. And right now the city is working with some of the retailers and some of the waste companies to develop recycling programs for the CFLs.
Or, folks, you can gather them up, and the next time Cirque du Soleil is in town, you can go give it to Cirque du Soleil. Can't do that. Here's something, Houston Business Journal, May 4th. White urges ports to go green. Mayor White, during Friday's closing session of the International Association of Ports and Harbors conference in Houston, encouraged the world's ports executives to create facilities that reduce environmental impacts. As part of the session, port leaders unanimously adopted a resolution calling for ports to promote clean air programs in an effort to fight global warming. Said White, "You are our heroes," referring to these ports that are leading the way on green technologies. What are ports doing that we should know about?
I think they're individually looking at plans to make their operations more efficient as well as reduce emissions. A lot of it is around electrification of facilities. Instead of having diesel kind of forklifts, electrify them, having kind of more cleaner generation facilities for the ships that are coming in. So I know that they are looking at that as individual plans, and more excitingly, they are looking at this as kind of a group of ports are starting to talk with each other around best practices. What are you doing over there in L.A.? What, you know, are we able to do this? And Mayor White really wants to step this up to be not just a local issue, but kind of a treaty of all ports.
We've got time for one more call. Let's take Lynn. Lynn, welcome to the New Capital Show.
How are you today?
Fine.
Great. I live in a high-rise, and just last night we had a board of members meeting, and I was able to get a newspaper recycling program started. And I was wondering if there's a way, what I'd like to do is put a challenge out to all the other high-rises, and like for a tonnage, who can recycle the most paper per ton, or something like that. And I was wondering if there's a way that, if there's an incentive program that we could, I don't know, I'm thinking, you know, if we can have a really great incentive out there for like high-rise communities or you know, other multi-family communities to get out there and start recycling, because the majority of high-rises and multi-family complexes do not recycle, and
it's sound like a leader, Lynn. You should start something.
Well, I'd like to have some type of incentive from the city, actually.
Okay.
I mean, I think that would be a lot more.
Okay, let's see what Chris says. Is there any incentive if somebody gets a fire in the belly and wants to do something?
Yeah.
What can they do with the city? Well, who do they call? How can they contact the city? And
contact my office? Just directly contact the mayor's office. I mean, we take these things very seriously. We are looking to reach out to the community to get involved, and leaders with good ideas. How do we make those? How do we get those people involved? I mean, the mayor set up multiple task force with leaders across the community to address specific issues.
Chris, a pleasure to have had you on the show today. Today's research production was by Kelly Dixon, Bob Wilkerson, Tyra Rankin.
Good things come around every
engineered by Kevin Wilcutt.
This good thing's been coming around for 20 years. Year 21 is coming up Saturday, July 28th at the Last Concert Cafe. I'm talking about the Watermelon Dance and Summer Social. What a great time at this family-friendly event for all. White Ghost Shivers, Blent, Plump, Pot Roast, Fallen Folk, Bruce James, Thread Atlas, Opie Hendrix, Kenneth Scott, The Hightailers, and Jennifer Grassman will all take their turns on stage just to please your ears. These local musicians work hard all year long, but they take this day to stop and salute KPFT. The $10 door fee benefits the station. So come on out and enjoy a slice of the other red meat. Icy cold watermelon. 1403 Nan Street, the address for the Last Concert Cafe. Saturday, July 28th is the date. We'll see you out there. 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Discover what KPFT is like during its most energetic moments? Now's your chance. Starting August 4th, KPFT kicks off its Summer Sizzle Pledge Drive, and we need your help to make it a success. You can put your spare time to use by volunteering to answer phones during the drive. Our phone volunteer trainings are Thursday, July 26th at 6 p.m. and Sunday, July 29th at 11 a.m. The sessions will be held at KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard. Your efforts make a difference and can make this a fun and successful drive. Evening and weekend shifts are available. Again, the phone volunteer training dates are Thursday, July 20th.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.